Welcome back to the Real Official Podcast. If you're new here and you're looking for fishing focused content that is mediocre yet mildly entertaining, you come to the right place. Here we discuss fishing equipment, tips, tricks, tactics, and news. I'm your host, Joseph. We're on episode number 5, and today we'll be breaking down ponds and how we can fish them more effectively. Now, some people might be thinking, it's a pond. But what is there really to know? And unfortunately, too many people have that mindset. And really, any body of water can be broken down. I mean, it's just really, do you feel like learning how to break down that body of water? That's really the question. Now, some people know, and others, they may care, they may want to do it. You know, it's just, where do you start as far as learning how to break down water? And I'm going to do a few episodes on this, because breaking down a pond is much different than breaking down a lake, which is much different than breaking down a river, which is much different than breaking down, say, a creek. You know, each one has their own unique qualities, I guess is a good way to put it. So each one is different to break down. So the first thing, when we're looking at a pond, we're going to look at the water. I mean, of course, we're going to look at the water first, because that's the first thing you're really going to see. And what we're looking at is clarity, depth, and bottom composition when it comes to the water. Or the pond itself, or the water, however you want to put it. So water clarity is the first thing that we're going to look at, because ponds can vary greatly between clear water to murky water to like a coffee stained water, you know, to a real dark color. And that's really going to dictate how you fish that. Going to dictate your baits. It's going to dictate everything. But most ponds that I come across, and it really depends on where in the country you are, to be honest, you know, or where in your state you are, because each area has, you know, it has different bottom composition, like the land around it itself. So ponds that are usually have like a hard clay, rocky bottom, you know, those are generally going to be clearer lake or clearer ponds, just because there's not a lot of silt when it comes to clay bottom with, you know, gravel and stuff. And those are a lot of the ponds that are man-made, of course. They're going to have that. Where, like, if you're fishing a farm pond, it might be a clay bottom, like a hard clay bottom, but it might have silt deposit, especially because a lot of those are creek-fed. You know, stuff like that. So they're going to have more of a silty composition, which their water clarity is going to change a lot more drastically than, say, that pond that has a very like clay bottom, gravel, you know, that kind of composition, because that's not going to hold a lot of silt in it. Or you'll have like a pond we fish out in East Texas. It's an old coal pit from back when it was a big train depot. So that pond there, it has a blackish, dark brown color. And that's all because of what it was used for and what its purpose was when it started its life, really. So that can vary. And then there's another one. It's more of a lake, not really a pond, but it has a lot of vegetation growth. That pond is very clear because of that vegetation, the vegetation filtering that water. And when you have a lot of it, it's going to filter that water fairly quickly, because you have so much vegetation in the water, and that's really what it's going to do. So that's the first thing we're going to look at, is clarity. After clarity, we're going to look at depth. Now, you might be asking, how do I figure out the depth in a pond? Well, It's fairly simple, really. One method is to use a float and a weight and a piece of lead. And what you'll do is you'll put that lead on your line, and then you'll take your float and tie it to the very end of the line. And you'll cast out to wherever you're trying to figure it out. And you'll reel down until your line is tight. And then from there, you're going to take your line and you're going to feed out 2 feet at a time. And you're going to count out 2, 4, 6, 8 until you see that float pop up. And that'll give you a general idea of how deep of water you're working with. And with ponds, I mean, generally the depth that you'll see is anywhere from 4 feet up to about 12 feet. And really, you're not really going to find any more or any ponds that are going to go over that 12 foot. And at least most of the ponds I've never seen any go over 12 feet. I mean, I did have one back home in Kansas. It's called, we called it the Big Pond, but it was off of 54th Street, I believe. But it was a fairly large pond. I mean, at that point, you really wouldn't even call it a pond. I'd say it was more of a lake because it was, I think, 20 acres or so, 30 acres. But anyways, that pond got up to about 20 feet. It was called the pond, but I would consider that more of a lake than a pond. And that did get up to 20 feet down at its deepest point. But that's one way to figure out depth. And then there are other ways you can figure it out. They have castable depth finders now, or fish finders. So if you want to spend the money, you know, those are usually anywhere from $99 up to $200-some-odd. And you can cast them out and slowly reel it back, and it'll give you kind of a bottom composition. It'll also, you know, detect if there are fish in that area, kind of like a regular boat's fish finder, a depth finder does, or GPS, graph, whatever you want to call it. You know, you have that option, but a lot of people, they're not going to spend that money for a castable fish finder, and I'm one of them. I'm not going to spend the money. I mean, unless I had a way to cast it and not lose it. There's been too many times I've casted something and one reason or another, it snaps off and then you see it fly 100 yards away. You know, I don't trust it. That's just me. I don't trust it because there's too many things that can go wrong. Now, it might be a viable option, maybe, but just my opinion, there's too many things that can go wrong for me to trust casting a $200 piece of electronics into a pond. And I have a hard enough time casting a $6-7 lure, let alone a $200 GPS unit or fish finder unit. Anyway, that's besides the point. Those are two ways to find out depth. And that's really key to figuring out where fish are in a pond because, you know, their water temperatures fluctuate fairly, I'm not going to say a lot, but they can fluctuate a little bit more than, say, a river or a lake because they're such small bodies of water that, you know, obviously when a little bit of the water heats up or cools down, eventually it's going to cause everything else to heat up or cool down because it's such a small body of water. And depending on what time of year is really going to dictate where in that water fish are going to be. Usually in the coldest and the hottest times of the year, those fish are going to be in the deepest part of that pond because it's going to have the least amount of temperature fluctuation. So, of course, that's where you're going to find them most times. Well, not most times, but during the coldest parts and the hottest parts of the year, you'll find them in those spots. And once, you know, you have those spring and fall times where that temperature is going to be very fairly mild, you know, 70 degrees, 65, 75, 80 degrees. That's, you know, you're going to find them more areas in that pond because the temperature is obviously a little more tolerable. And it allows the fish to move around a little bit more and they're not going to get into areas because when it's really hot, there's areas that the oxygen levels in the water are going to be fairly low because of how hot it is. And during the winter, those areas are usually going to be fairly cold, too cold for the fish to really function in those areas. So that's one of the reasons that depth is really important in a pond. And I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier as well. Bottom composition is also important because that gives you an idea of where fish are going to be in that pond, because bottom composition, like I said, it's important because A, it gives fish a like structure to relate to. It also gives them like areas to spawn or to for smaller fish to hide, you know, things like that. So like a pond that we fish a lot in Hearst, Texas, that pond, the bottom composition, it is silty and it has a lot of debris on the bottom. So it has a lot of leaves, pine needles, you know, stuff like that floating around. And that's just because the area around it, the trees around it are either pine trees. No, not pine trees. No, yeah, pine trees. And other trees that are like lining this pond. So the bottom composition is going to be very, you know, has a lot of debris, has a lot of stuff on bottom. And that can be a good and a bad thing. Good thing in certain times of year because it gives you somewhere to, it gives the fish somewhere to relate to in some of those areas, especially the area closer to the dam or the outflow, because that's where, of course, when the water gets too high and starts to flow out of the outflow, it's going to pull some of that debris and stuff towards it. So that does help sometimes, especially when you're fishing for smaller fish. Not really like bass and catfish. They don't really relate to that kind of stuff. They relate to more things, but we'll get into that when we get into cover. But like I said, bottom composition, important. So if you have, again, kind of the clay bottom with more gravel and stuff, that's a good bottom. It's hard bottom. That'll dictate what you want to fish with as well. So you learn the bottom composition by kind of doing what you did with depth. You want to take something. I mean, either a piece of lead or even if you want to cast a lure out like a Carolina rig or something, you know, and just kind of drag bottom a little bit. And once you get that lure back, you're going to have stuff on it that's going to give you an idea of what the bottom composition is like. So if you get it back and it's got a little bit of, you know, dirt on it, like soft dirt, you know, okay, I got a little bit of a silty bottom. Or if you get it back and you have like leaves and sticks, you know, little sticks on it, you know, okay, there's a good amount of debris on the bottom. Or if you get it back and it's like a almost a paint kind of, like it's kind of a thickish mud and, you know, your weight has some scratches or whatever on it, you know, you got a more of a hard gravel clay type bottom. So those are a couple ways to figure out bottom composition, because that's really important, as I said before. Also, if you have braided line and tungsten weights or fishing jig heads, stuff like that, those are very good at helping you figure out your bottom composition, because that's a very sensitive setup. So for me, like I use a lot of Wu tungsten. You know, that's a very good tungsten brand. You know, I use them. I'm part of their pro staff. And they allow you to feel more than regular lead does. And honestly, I used to hate the idea of using tungsten. I really did. Until I actually said, you know what? I've gotten as good as I have at fishing by trying new things and expanding my horizon and learning. So I ordered some Wu tungsten, and lo and behold, it was much more sensitive. And it was, to me, it's worth that extra little bit of money you're going to use to buy it. And it really does help you figure out what you're fishing on, because when you have a setup like light braid or just braid in general and a tungsten jig head or tungsten flipping weights, you know, like for the Carolina rigs, they help you feel that bottom composition. So that's another good way to tell what you're fishing on without having to actually put your feet in the water or physically see what the bottom composition is. So those are a few good ways to kind of break down the water, just water, what you can see and what you can't see. You know, this isn't, we're not talking about cover or anything like that. Just the water, like the clarity, depth, and bottom composition. That's what you want to know. Well, first thing you kind of want to figure out. The next thing is cover. You know, cover in a pond can be sunken brush, flowing water, a dramatic depth change, water inflows and outflows, which kind of couples with flowing water, and, you know, the topography of your bank. So all those factors will kind of dictate where your fish are. So good cover for a pond would be trees that have fallen over and are laying in the water. That's a very easy and productive piece of cover for ponds. And I say easy because you're going to tell a tree that's fallen in the pond. You know, that, I mean, that's not going to be hard to miss. And it's easily fishable because you see it and you can easily cast to it, put a bobber over it, you know, whatever. So we're not going to really stick to sunken brush too much because that's a very easy thing to see and figure out. And even if you cast out and you get hung up, you can kind of guess that, okay, there's something there. Sunken cover or brush, something's there. So you cast in that area, but you don't cast right on top of that area. You got hung, you cast to the left or the right. And that way you kind of fish that area a little bit more effectively without getting snagged. Now, another good piece of cover in ponds is flowing water, because I'm not going to say it's a rarity, but flowing water in a pond is a fish attractant, just because that that water is more oxygenated and it stirs up little bugs, little things on the bottom, gives smaller fish something to eat, and then in turn gives the bigger fish something to eat. So that's another thing to look for, is that flowing water. Another good place to look for in ponds is like a dramatic depth change. And you'll find that dramatic depth change when you're doing your pre-scout, like I was saying before, with figuring out the depth of water that you're fishing. And a dramatic depth change isn't always like 12 to 4 feet. You know, it can be as simple as a little ledge in that pond where they may have been, you know, dredging it out or whatever. So it'll go from like 12 feet up to 8 feet. And that ledge is going to hold fish because what happens is those big fish will sit on the bottom side of that ledge, and little fish or whatever's floating up on the top of that ledge, they can be ambushed a lot easier. So a dramatic depth change is a good thing to look for because that will hold fish. And like I said, it doesn't have to be a very dramatic depth change, just such as 12 to 6 feet or, well, not 6 feet, but 4 feet or, you know, 6 to 1 feet. It doesn't have to be anything that dramatic. But something as simple as 12 to 10 or 6 to 4 or 8 to 6, you know, something that creates a ledge in that pond. And you can tell that ledge when you're, like I said, the pre-scouting, that's why it's very important, because you can tell that depth change. Because once you come up to the depth change, you're going to have to pull your lead or whatever over that ledge, and you'll be able to feel it because it's going to give you more resistance and it's going to be a little bit harder to do. It's almost going to feel like you're snagged when in actuality you're not. You're just pulling your bait over that ledge. So that's a good way to figure out a dramatic depth change. Let me not say dramatic. Just a depth change that causes, you know, structure. You know, a ledge or ledge drop off. Same thing, a pocket in that pond. Something that gives the fish something to relate to. And of course, I already mentioned the flowing water. And that's really a very key thing. flowing water really does dictate a lot for pond fish. And once you find flowing water, that's why it's always good to fish like ponds, like when it's raining, a day after it's raining, because you're going to have water flowing in and out of that pond, and it's going to congregate those fish in those specific areas. So that's always a good thing to look for. And it's always something that's going to attract fish. Now, if you catch them, that's a different story. And we're going to get into that in a little bit, because pond fish are very pressured and they're harder to catch. So that water inflow, outflow, and that cover is very important to find, because they're going to relate to that stuff, and they're going to be easier to target once you find what they're relating to. But catching them is a different story, and we'll get into it. Last thing for just cover on a pond is shoreline topography. And basically, for people that might not know, you know, topography is basically just how the shoreline and the pond itself is kind of, you know, that's how the landscape around the pond is. So if you have a pond, it's just a big oval, you know, that topography is not going to be as important because it's a big oval. You're going to focus more on your water inflows, your dramatic depth changes, sunken brush. You're going to focus on those points. But if you have a pond that's not an oval, it's a very abstract, you know, shaped pond, you're going to look for areas that, you know, a point that comes out into the pond, because points hold fish. And that goes for lakes too. You know, points hold fish. And you'll look for little bays off of the main pond that have a lot of cover, you know, things like that. There's not a lot of topography that you can really find that differs from ponds, but mostly it's the little pieces of land that are kind of coming out to a point in the pond. You know, those hold fish, or your like little pockets off, like you'll see a straight shoreline, all of a sudden it'll dip into like a little pocket and then come back out and keep going. You know, those places will hold fish just because it changes the outline of that pond and it holds fish. So that's what we mean by shoreline topography. And that will help you catch more fish in a pond, is just knowing that, okay, these little areas are going to be not more productive, but they're going to have a higher percentage that a fish is sitting here, you know. Now that we've covered cover and water, the last thing is going to be your presentation and bait selection. So for ponds, there's a few key points that I always really gravitate towards, and that's thinking outside the box, switching up my retrieve, and using outlandish colors. You know, and when I say, let's start with thinking outside the box. What I mean by that is, with ponds, you kind of got to think a little bit different than every other person that's going to come to that pond. You got to think of something, or a rig or something that, you know, most people might not use at a pond, that's going to be different than what that fish sees on a day-to-day basis. Because if you give them something that they always see, fish are smarter than you think. You know, especially fish that have been hooked. Those fish are a lot less likely to bite a lure because they've been hooked before. So you really want to think outside the box. So if you are in a body of water, say, and you know, you see guys all around you, they're all using Carolina rig worms or whatever, well, then you might want to switch over to a Ned rig. A Ned rig might work because nobody uses that, or people might not use it in that area. Now, just as a little tip, the Ned rig works when nothing else will work. A Ned rig or a wacky rig worm will work. That's when I can't get bit at a pond, those are the two that I go to. On a spinning, my setup is a six foot six spinning combo with 8-pound braid. Very, very light braid. And that setup gets me bit. When nothing else will, that will work. So just a little tidbit there, a little food for thought. The Ned Rig and the Wacky Rig will work. And honestly, those are thinking outside the box. Especially the Wacky Rig, because honestly, not a lot of people use it. Now, a lot of bass fishermen, of course, they're going to say they use it. But when you think about it, a lot of the people that are coming to ponds to fish, a lot of them probably are not, you know, big time bass fishermen or whatever. Most people that go to ponds, if you've noticed, or most fishermen do notice, you know, a lot of people, and they're not really out there just to fish. They're really out there to fish, but, you know, relax with the family and, you know, just have a relaxing day. They're not out there primarily to fish and, you know, put fish in a cooler or just fish in general. You know, that's like priority number three on their list of priorities when they're at some of these ponds. So the Wacky Rig might not be a rig that's widely seen, or, you know, a weightless worm, things like that. So you want to keep an open mind when you're fishing ponds, just so you can have a good day fishing, especially if it's a pressured pond. Trust me, any pond that you see around you that is labeled on Google as a pond, like a fishing pond or whatever, those are going to be pressured because most people are going to go to these places. Like I said, most of them are going to go relax, but a lot of them are going to go to fish. So thinking outside the box is a very big proponent of being successful at ponds. The next thing that I mentioned was switching up the lure retrieval. That is very important, because if you just do the old cast and wind, again, the fish have seen it. It doesn't look natural. It's not going to get bit. And you're also not doing anything to get a reaction strike, which a different retrieval will do. You know, a good example. I remember fishing with my brother James, and he's very good about switching his retrieve. He's very good about it. So we were fishing a pond, and he, you know, the old slow, the wind and grind, as I call it, wasn't getting bit. So he decided to switch up the retrieve, and he was using a topwater popper. And, you know, the slow grind with that is just reel, pop, reel, pop, reel, pop. Well, what he decided to do when he switched it up is he started treating it like a walker. So he was reeling and constantly twitching his rod tip, which made that popper kind of act funny, act crazy. And he got a reaction strike. Unfortunately, he didn't get the hook in the fish because it was probably just too small. But that triggered a strike in a highly pressured pond, because I see people fish this pond all the time. So lure retrieval is important. So if you're using, say, oh man, what's a good representation? So if you're using like a Carolina rig, just example, most people do the lift and drag with Carolina rig. So one way that I do is I'll pitch or throw to a piece of cover, and I'll do a double pop. Like I'll pop it twice and then pop it twice, and I get bit because it's a different look. It's a different retrieve, and it's not something that they see all the time. Or if I'm using a frog, you know, I'll do a pop, pop, pause, or I do a pop, 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 pause, you know, just switching it up to make the whatever fish is there, give them something different to look at, because of course, if it looks different, it's going to catch their attention. Whereas they see a lot of this stuff all the time. They see everybody and their mother fishing for them. So you want to switch up that retrieval, and you want to give it a little bit of a different cadence, a different speed, you know, something just to get their attention. Because, of course, when you get their attention, you're more likely to get bit. The last thing for when with presentation and bait selection when it comes to ponds is using outlandish colors. And that sounds weird. Well, for some people it might sound weird. For me, it sounds completely natural because I do it all the time. Outlandish colors are a good thing when you're fishing ponds because you're thinking outside the box again. You're putting some thought into what you're doing because if you're an avid fisherman, you're thinking, okay, this place is pressured. What can I do differently? You know, everybody uses green pumpkin. Everybody uses a black and blue. Everybody uses different, you know, more natural looking colors. Well, instead of a natural color, like a pumpkin or a black, why not use a hot pink or a color that I really like? It's a chartreuse green and pumpkin type Ned rig. And that's a very good color for me in ponds. Or I use a white whopper plopper. You know, a lot of people use more of a natural color. Well, when they see that white and orange topwater going over their head, not only is it making a lot of noise, but it's also like, oh, never seen that before. I'm going to eat it. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's how fish look at it. Like, that looks different. I'm going to eat it. So that's a good way to do it. Like that hot pink. Oh, that's an excellent color for ponds. I get bit on pink all the time. hot pink, hot yellow, orange is a good color. You know, those outlandish colors will get you bit. And those outlandish colors, you know, a lot of people don't use the outlandish colors. Like I said, a lot of people, when they think pond fishing, they try to be as natural as possible. And that does work. I'm not going to say it doesn't, you know, but sometimes those lures or colors are just seen all the time. So they're not going to, you know, they're not going to get that reaction that you're looking for. You know, there's a couple of things on the presentation and bait selection. Now, a few lures that I love to use in ponds, and these are just personal opinion. I'm not going to make it seem like these are just everybody's choice, which for some people they might be. But one, if I'm running top waters, I like a whopper plopper because it makes a lot of noise. I like a frog. You know, frog is always a go-to, especially when you have a lot of vegetation. And those two top waters produce for me 90% of the time when I'm running top water. Doesn't matter where I'm at, what I'm fishing for, because I've caught bluegills and, you know, sunfish on top waters. Funny, like yesterday I was fishing a pond and I had bluegills trying to eat a whopper plopper that's about 2.5 inches. And, you know, their eyes are bigger than their stomach, essentially. And a frog is also very good, which most people agree on those two things when it comes to top water. Now, there are a lot of other options, you know, what is it called? I can't think of it. A popper or a spook, which is a walking bait, or a wake bait. You know, those are all good options, but I don't have as much success on those in ponds as I do with the whopper popper or the frog. The flog. The frog. Two more baits that I really like are a football jig or a Carolina rigged worm. Those two get me a lot of bites as well, especially the worm, 8.5 inch. The big power worms, you know, the 10 inch or 12 inch, not really. Those are more of a lake presentation, just because a bait that big sometimes will actually spook pond fish because they're not used to seeing it. But you know, 8.5 inch. Even if you want to like really micro, like bring it down to a micro size, like a 4 inch worm, something like that, that would also work, because that's, you know, it kind of fits what I was saying before, presentation and bait selection. Think outside the box, outlandish color. So a small 4 inch worm, hot pink. They don't see it, so you're more inclined to eat it. You know, and then the football jig, that works for me, especially when there's a lot of, like if I see a lot of sunken cover in a pond, that football jig or pitching jig, however you want, whatever one you want to go with, those work very well for me. Because when it comes to ponds, those fish are going to be buried in that cover. And they're buried in the cover because they're so pressured. So for me, I want to get into the as far back into the cover as I can without losing my lure, of course. And though that pitching jig is very good for that. So is the Carolina rig. If you're not using the worm, then using a small crawfish type bait or a small creature bait, even a lizard. Now, lizard baits are, I get a lot of bites on lizard baits in ponds too. So those are also viable. I mean, some people ask, why don't I use crankbaits? I really don't like crankbaits in ponds just because I get more snags and hangups than I do anything else. The lipless crankbaits are pretty good in ponds because you keep those up out of the bottom a little bit easier than you can a crankbait. Those are very good. That and a white is a white for the lipless crankbait, or a, like I said, outlandish color. So like a bright red or a chrome, stuff like that. That's not always seen. Very good colors. Aside from that, the Ned rig, I kind of touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking, I believe it was bottom composition. No, I forget where I was mentioning earlier in the podcast, but the Ned rig will get me bit when nothing else gets me bit. And I just started using the Ned rig last year. I don't know why. Yes, I am an idiot. For those seasoned fishermen on the podcast that are listening, I will admit I am an idiot. The Ned rig is great. Like if you don't pick up anything else and you just want to go catch fish, the Ned rig is your best bet. Now, some people might give me flack on that. Well, Joseph, you know, the Carolina rig worm is, you know, that's what I get all my bites on. That's what I go to when I catch nothing. Or, you know, I go to a pitching jig. That's fine. That's great. I didn't say those things wouldn't work. I'm saying when I have tough fishing conditions, my Ned rig is my go-to because I can hop it on the bottom. I can do a cast and kind of let it drift back to me type retrieve. So it doesn't really touch bottom. It's just kind of gliding back to where I'm at on the bank. And I get bit a lot doing that presentation. So those are a few of my favorite baits to use in ponds. I try to keep it as simple as possible when fishing ponds. And that's just because a lot of times you're walking when you're fishing ponds. You don't have the luxury of being in a boat or a kayak or anything like that because, you know, there's no point in having that stuff on a pond. There's not enough water to, you know, for you to bring a kayak on it or even a two-man little bass boat. There's just not enough water. So those are a few baits that I like. And all this stuff, like I said, this is how we're going to dissect a pond. We want to look at the water. We want to look at the cover that it has. And we also want to change up our presentations and bait selections because ponds, they're pressured. So I think that's it. There's really nothing else to talk about with this topic. Now, if people want to leave me any comments or anything in the comment section and kind of point other little things, you know, of course, you know, we'll take those things into account because there may be something that I didn't think of in this episode. There may be something that I wasn't privy to, information or, you know, whatnot. And that's one thing I love about the fishing community is a lot of people are willing to help. They're willing to teach. they're willing to give information to new people and to people like myself. I've been doing it for 25 years, but I guarantee there's somebody out there that can teach me a thing or two. So I'm never, ever going to tell anybody to just listen to my podcast and nobody else, because there are probably fishermen out there. No, there are fishermen out there better than me. There is no one fisherman that is the best in the world at one time, because there's so many people that are good at one thing and not good at another. Like the best fishermen in the world, they have a couple of things that they're the greatest at. And then there's other pros that they have a specific presentation or way of fishing that they're good at. So there's always somebody better than you at fishing. I mean, you know, there's always that saying, well, there's somebody's got to be the baddest. Yeah, they are. There are some people, they're the baddest at one way of fishing, because that's their specialty. They're a specialist in that. But they might not be a specialist in another spot. That might be another fisherman that he's the best at that. So if you see that kind of stuff, you see people leaving comments or they're giving information, you know, take it. I mean, some stuff, take it with a grain of salt. I mean, if you want to, but always be open to information, always be open to learning. That's how you're going to get better. And that's part of the reason I started this podcast. I want people to get better. I want them to enjoy fishing and not get sunburned for no reason. If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to give us a follow. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and all major podcast platforms. Turn on notifications so you can be notified whenever a new episode goes live. Share it with your friends, family, as well as that random guy you pass by on the sidewalk. And don't forget to give us a crispy 5-star review. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This has been the Real Official Podcast. We're out.